This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you so much for being here in the morning. I said I'm going to do a better job of having a more consistent show, at least hopefully daily throughout the week. And it might be at different times, but I really appreciate y'all being here. I figure that this might be an actual good time for people abroad in the UK and so forth. I never want to step on my friend Julie Grant's show, so likely I'll never go anytime between 8 and 9 because of her show, which is so good. If any of you have a chance to ever catch Court TV with Julie Grant, she's wonderful. She's such a victim's advocate. But this morning we're here to talk about new information concerning Melody Buzzard. Melody Buzzard, as many of you know, I'm going to put her up on the screen, went missing. It's kind of a convoluted story, but she was really missing for quite a while, meaning out of the view of the public. According to law enforcement, the last verified sighting was actually, despite what rumors are, was August of this year, where there was a verified sighting. And actually on, and I have to give credit where it's due, the Daily Mail did a great job of surfacing this particular photo. And this is of Melody in 2023. So you can see she's so much taller than that. The other pictures we've seen, and you could see she really seemed to have go on a growth spurt since some of those other photos we've seen. But this is her outside the home. Again, it was still summer of 2023, so not that recent, but you can kind of get an idea of her height. Also, of course, the new surveillance photos, which many of us have seen now. This is her. Anybody who is saying it's not her, that's inaccurate. This is her. They know from the surveillance footage, combined with really the footage of her mother being there with her and this disguise that was put on her. You can see really how thin she is. If you look back in this picture from 2023, those huge, big, full, healthy, chubby cheeks that you want to see with a girl this age, to me, she seems very small and slender here, very thin. And then, of course, with the wig on and carrying a purse, actually, which is also odd for a 9-year-old. But nevertheless, these are the most recent pictures that anyone has of Melody. And when she was last seen, this is going to be the 7th, October 7th, that these photos are from. Now, recall, for those of you who don't know, her mother, and I think I have a photo here of her mom. Let's see. I'm going to actually bring up a very recent photo. This is a photo, again, I have to give credit to the Daily Mail, who was able to photograph her mom. And you could see another disguise, another wig type looking, looks like a wig sort of on her hair or on her head. It's hard to tell for sure. Glasses completely disguised. Of course, one can't blame her in a sense because everybody is outside of her house. They're posting photos. There are all sorts of tributes and so on and so forth. But this is the mother. And what she did on the 7th of this month was she took Melody. They went to a rental car location and they leased a car. They got in that car and they drove clear to Nebraska. Now, for those who may not know, may not have driven this trip, and I'm from Nebraska, meaning I spent the first half of my life there as a young girl from about the age of 3 until about 11. And my family is still there. I love Nebraska, but I am telling you, this is a brutal, brutal trip across western Nebraska. They would have gone through Colorado, through desolate parts of California, Nevada, I believe. And in any event, this is 1,500 miles. I've talked a little bit about this before, but if you are pedal to the metal, driving 75 miles an hour, and you don't stop, it's still going to take you 20 hours to get to Nebraska. So that is impossible to do. Obviously, the fact that she made this trip up and back in 3 days is, quite frankly, pretty miraculous. And the route home was a out-of-the-way route through Kansas. It is not the fastest route. Y'all are welcome to Google Map it. I have. The routes that go through Kansas are the slower routes due to the roads that are taken and highways and so forth. So it's not a route you would ever want to take to go up into Nebraska through Kansas. But nevertheless, that's how she went home, which to me is very concerning. We've talked about it before that there's really only three possibilities in this case. One possibility is that she drove to Nebraska to drop her off with somebody that family doesn't know about them, but only she knows about, a friend or somebody that she knows in some way, maybe from the internet or some other way, who was willing to keep her daughter. Number two is that she was sex trafficked. The other night with Ashley Bamfield, we talked a lot about that. Ashley really believes that could have happened. I don't believe that so much anymore. I know it was also suggested by the sister, by Melody's sister-in-law, Melody's sister, not sister-in-law, Melody's half-sister suggested that initially that she could have sold her. Why? Because Ashley is in debt, severe debt, $23,000 worth of debt. She's in and out of court on debts with her, you know, companies that loaned her money, so on and so forth. I mean, she's in pretty much a financial wreck right now. And so, of course, Melody could have solved that problem if she was able to sell her into slavery or into the sex trade. Finally, and I hate to say this, but of course we are a true crime channel, so I have to go there with a very plausible and possible reality, and that is that Melody that Ashley killed her little daughter Melody, and that Melody is sadly, possibly no longer with us. Obviously, that is our least, you know, we... Look, sex trafficking would be horrible. Being dead is obviously horrible. Being in the care of possibly a trusted another person is the best case scenario, but still likely not a great scenario. But what are our clues? And there's some important clues here, I think. I want to show you. This is Ashley Buzzard. She's livid. And she spent quite a number of minutes tearing up missing posters of her daughter, you know, going around and doing this. There's a pretty interesting video of her doing this. And it's just really unbelievable that as a mother, you would ever want to destroy missing posters concerning your daughter's whereabouts. But when you really look at the circumstances, it makes all the sense in the world. Ashley knows precisely where Melody is. I assure you of that. She knows precisely, meaning what she did with Melody. If she killed her, obviously she knows all about that. If she's with somebody else, you know, she's going to know about that. And if she trafficked her, she was fine with that. So she knows that that is the hands that she would be in. I have to say, out of all three of those, I think it is much more likely that she has harmed Melody. Let me tell you why I think that. I call your attention to a case that some of you might have known. It's the Hoggard case. I'm sorry, I want to say this right. Hoggle case, excuse me. Catherine Hoggle. She had two small children. This was clear back in 2014. Please look up this case. It's a very interesting case. Almost the exact same situation. A mother having mental health issues, having two children. They were younger, but still three and four, I believe they were. They weren't, you know, infants. And these children absolutely just disappeared off the face of the earth. Her children's name were Sarah and Jacob, and they've never been seen since 2014. Now, finally, law enforcement took Catherine in. This was a long time ago, on various charges, which is what everybody's screaming about in this case. Let's get her in on child endangerment as an example. Or to me, she should go in front of the dependency court, and a judge, she should be made to answer where in the world Melody is. And if she can't answer that, the judge should hold her in contempt of court. I truly believe that this would be a great avenue. I don't know why law enforcement isn't following that, other than I believe they might be wanting to reach out with a more honey approach. I call it the honey. You catch a lot of bees with honey. You don't catch any with vinegar. And they know she is their best way of ever finding out what happened to Melody. Really, she's the only way at this point finding out. So if they can handle her with a little bit of kid gloves and let her keep her freedom, she's probably also going to bury herself. Look, and on October 15th, for those of you who don't know, a search warrant was already served at Melody's house. October 15th, a long time ago, just a week or so, a little bit over a week after she went missing, really only 5 days after she returned without Melody. So if you look at that circumstance, they already had probable cause to go in there and look. Apparently, I don't know what they found or what they took, but get this, as you all know now, just recently what happened last week, in the last week, they served another search warrant on Melody's home. I'm going to bring up a few photos here. Let me bring up this one. Let me remove this one and bring up this one. That's federal agents, likely. My pet peeve again is dressed like a federal agent. I cannot stand that the FBI now lets agents go out into the field when they're, I'm not talking about when you're on surveillance or when you're in an undercover capacity or when you're doing a enforcement action. I am talking about when you are trying to rep yourself as the FBI for all the public to see in search warrants. And I give them a little latitude in search warrants, because in warrants, a lot of times you have to go in, you have to be on your hands and knees, you got to get dirty and filthy and all of that. So a lot of leeway with search warrants. But when you're taking somebody and escorting them and in the public's view, you should be dressed like an FBI agent, like a professional. That's my view. That's my slant. I will never come off of that. And I really hate that the FBI has gone down this route. Okay, sorry, get off my soapbox. This is where they were serving the search warrant and ended up escorting her out and had her sequestered for hours while they conducted this search warrant. Now, when I was on Ashley Banfield, she talked about how, according to neighbors, so again, as you know, the media is all over this. The media, meaning News Nation. News Nation, and this is why I love News Nation. News Nation, first of all, they present both sides. They allow, for instance, I was able to talk with Ashley, my POV on this, which I'm not leaning towards sex trafficking as much as Ashley is. And I never get calls and say, Jen, you have to say this, or Jen, you need to say this. In fact, I don't even know what questions I'm going to be asked. Typically, it's a conversation They know that I'm going to know the information and that their guests are going to be equipped with the knowledge to answer questions on the fly. And if I do receive any questions, often different people, meaning Ashley, Cuomo, whoever it might be, they completely deviate from the questions because they are going with the flow of the conversation. Anyway, Ashley very much believes this could be a trafficking case. It could be, and I'm not discounting that, but I really am leaning towards she did something. The probable cause to obtain a second search warrant to go into that house, again, they would have had to have new and fresh probable cause to show that something got put in that house after October 15th. Because they already served on October 15th, and you can't go back on a previous warrant. Once you've left and left your return, you're done. You're out of there. The only way you can go back in is to get another search warrant. Even if it's a half an hour later, you can't go back in. So how were they able to get this other search warrant? They have probable cause based on her actions. Remember, she's out, and they're likely monitoring a lot of what she's doing. And they were able to go back in there and search warrants. Now, according to these neighbors, they took out two big yellow bags. If those yellow bags are what I'm thinking, what we have in the FBI, they're these big plastic bags, which would tell me that they're in at least those bags, there wouldn't have been biodegradable items. It would have been non-biodegradable items. Although I don't know if there were also other bags taken out that would have had things, and those would be paper bags. Were those taken? We don't know. We also know from neighbors that purportedly drywall, carpeting, and even concrete was cracked up in that garage. That's what neighbors reported, and that is what Ashley Banfield, of course, reported. So again, a lot of news outlets are out there conducting their own interviews, trying to get to the bottom of what is going on and where little Melody could be. Again, the information is only as good as that neighbor that reported it, but that is the report. And I find that all very interesting because when you look at cases where people have committed these sorts of crimes, obviously they're going to go in there with luminol and with other chemical components to try to see if there is any sign of blood or anything else that either could have been brought back in there. In other words, clothing, anything like that, that could have been hidden in there. And so they're going to be looking for all of that. Also, they're going to be looking for anything that could be stashed, especially when you have a person who is mentally unbalanced, who I believe to be very paranoid. What do I base that on? I base that on disguises. I base that on the fact that she has essentially sequestered her daughter for a long period of time, keeping her away from relatives for over 4 years, from her maternal grandmother for about 2 years. Nobody's been able to see this little girl. She lives a life, what I'm seeing is of severe paranoia. And this could have likely led to this whole action of getting a rental car, thinking it would be less traceable, disguising her daughter and taking her on a 1,500 mile drive, which again, I don't know how she did that in those days. That's literally driving, barely stopping to get gas, maybe to get a bite to eat, barely through a drive-through, continuing on, going to wherever she went. And once you stop, I mean, you would think you would sleep. And then whatever happened at the location she finally went to, and then turning around and coming back, even a longer route. So when you look at all of that, it's really mind-boggling, but it's not when you look through the lens of somebody who has serious issues. These are undercover officers, not really undercover because they have on their shirts, I think crime scene on there and other things. But clearly, I guess, not wanting her to realize that they are law enforcement. So she would open the door and they serve some papers here on her. Could have been to do with the bank situation. I still don't understand why dependency court isn't involved. Put her before a judge on a court ordered situation, have her escorted there and have her have to tell a judge what she did with little Melody, or else hold her in contempt. But again, the FBI might be seeking another route. Just the fact that with her out, they were able to develop probable cause to get back into that home, to serve a search warrant on the rental car, and to go to a storage locker, which maybe the only way they found that storage locker was Ashley being out and maybe driving to that storage locker, being under surveillance. So there's a rhyme to the reason. There's a lot of clues that can be obtained. And in a case like this, you've got to look at the person with the knowledge, and the only person with all the knowledge is Ashley. So I want to talk a little bit about why I think the sex trafficking might not be the number one option, or why it isn't the number one option with me. And it's because in later weeks, about 2 weeks or so ago, Ashley attempted to obtain a rental car again at two different locations. Now, this tells she wasn't able to, probably due to funds and so forth. But what this tells me is, where was she going? Some would say, oh, she was trying to flee. No, I don't think she has any ideas about fleeing. My thought is she's held up in her house knowing that she can't be forced to say anything. She might even know and may have even Googled this Hoggle case, which shows a woman, again, who has never had to pay for her crime of murdering, likely her two children, who have never been seen since, right? That's been 11 years, and this woman is still, Ms. Hoggle I'm talking about, is in and out of psychiatric treatment and evaluation. And I think that that would be the same destiny possibly for Ashley. And so she's really playing this, slow playing this very well, because time is ticking for Melody. But my point is, did she rent that car to go back to where Melody was? Again, if she is in the hands of somebody she knows and that she trusted her with, did she want to go back to visit her or collect her? Or tragically, is she worried and getting paranoid about where Melody's remains, if she killed her, where those remains could be? And so she wanted to head back over to where she knows Melody is. That's the reason I'm not sure. That's one of the reasons that I am not sure the sex trafficking is jiving with me as the number one possibility. The other reason is the probable cause that was developed. Obviously, law enforcement believes there's foul play here. And there is foul play. Whenever you have a mom that is tearing down signs, she doesn't want her daughter to be found. She doesn't want eyes on this. And this is why, of all the cases we've worked, geez, do we need this in mainstream media and in social media? This, her face and these pictures need to be splashed everywhere. If you have any social media platform, I hope each of you today will go to your platform and put a picture of missing Melody up on your platform. I hope you keep watching News Nation, watching Court TV, watching shows, and there's so few of them that are featuring Melody. Remember, this is how Gabby Petito was found. Gabby Petito, if you remember, and I know it's been a while, a lot of people might have forgotten, but Brian Laundrie went back straight to his parents' house. He didn't run. He went to his parents' house and he parked Gabby Petito's van there for all to see. And law enforcement, again, was acting just like they're doing now, conducting search warrants in the laundry house of the van. Obviously, Brian ended up taking a coward's way out, going into the reservoir and killing himself, which again, that shot was taken with the left hand. I'll never believe that that wasn't assisted, especially when you saw the diary he wrote where he tried to get or talked about getting friends to help him off himself, you know, and the fact that the laundries were out there. And then they went back and picked up his car. They knew he was dead. Many of us, most of us in law enforcement, including the FBI, all of the FBI and local law enforcement, everybody thought he was someplace other than that reservoir because they had looked for weeks and weeks and weeks and couldn't find him. And what did the parents do the first day that reservoir was open? They go back and they know exactly where he is, because I will never believe they didn't assist in his death. But nevertheless, I digress again, because this case reminds me of that from the standpoint of likely Gabby Petito never would have been found, but for somebody in social media showing that van, talking about the story, talking about this missing girl, because remember at that point she was just missing, Gabby Petito, and that van being seen by a family who just happened to recall a van on the side of the road when they were going through the vast Grand Tetons of all places. And they were, law enforcement was able to pinpoint with their help the location that that van was, which then, of course, even though she was far from that van, they were able to track Gabby Petito's remains to the side of that kind of stream area down there. So that was because of you. That's because of the public. And this case is may be solved if the public's help is there. The Bureau behind the scenes, they have hundreds of FBI analysts that are amazing. These are the men and women of the FBI that do the analytical work. So you have a case agent on the case, and then they give the pertinent information to an analyst, and that analyst is allowed to go down the tracks they think would be appropriate to looking at databases, to reviewing footage from all of these potential places that she would have driven en route to Nebraska. We already know that there is footage, apparently, of Melody with Ashley on the way to Nebraska. That's been reported, and at stops. And so you have law enforcement, particularly the FBI analysts, that are meticulously looking through video coverage. You have boots on the ground agents that have AO leads. Those are auxiliary office leads that are literally out on the ground going to these stops, going to McDonald's, going to these various places that they could have stopped and trying to get footage so that they can try to discern where she went. Obviously, somebody is breaking down whatever GPS information might be in the vehicle she rented. It was a late model Malibu. And so I'm sure that that's something else they're using. Where did that make a long stop? And why do they think she brought back information with her that would show the crime, indicia of the crime? Because law enforcement had to show that, at least that there was probable cause to believe that, that her body was either in that vehicle, so they're looking for blood there. Hair would not be a big deal because she had long, beautiful hair. So I could imagine there would be hair still in the car, even after cleaning. But what about that trunk? Was she ever in that trunk? How well was that cleaned? Were they able to find any bodily fluids that could have been there that might give us some suggestion as to what happened to little Melody if she was indeed killed? Again, the reasons I think I lean toward that she hurt Melody in some way are the fact that she wanted to rent that car, I think, to go back and look. Number two, law enforcement's actions. They are acting as if this is a case of foul play and that they're going to find indicia or other evidence regarding this. The other thing I want to know, so often when you go back into a house, you can tell what happened to a person by what's not there as opposed to what is there. What is Melody's room still there, intact? Does she have a bed? Does she have all her toys there? Are all of her clothes there? What's there? Or when law enforcement went back, kind of like what happened in the Sebastian Rogers case, is it gone? Is his room still intact? Is Melody's room still intact? Is her bed there? Are all her clothes there and things? If her items and her personal things are gone, everyone, then likely she's gone. But only law enforcement knows that. Only law enforcement knows that. We don't know about any of that right now. Again, the paranoia is at pitch level. And typically the reason you're paranoid is because you've done something wrong. And then, of course, if you have a mental issue like this mom has, you're also acting in this way even before you've done something wrong. In this case, she's disguising her little girl, I think, getting ready to do something very wrong. Even if she took her to somebody who convinced her that she would keep her for some period of time, you know, who is this person? And again, I think because this case isn't getting the media coverage like a Gabby Petito, so many people have no idea who Melody is. Look, most of the nation has no idea who Sebastian Rogers is. And he was arguably the number one missing case for about a year, even though that case has completely gone cold and nothing's being done except for likely behind the scenes because they can't prove, law enforcement can't quite prove what they think happened. Anyway, I keep digressing because there's so many cases like this. Help find Melody. That's my biggest message today. Help find Melody. We got to keep her name out there. We got to keep her face out there. Because my biggest concern is that this is a case, and I hope y'all look this case up, Catherine Hoggle. I believe it was out of Maryland. And like I said, 11 years later, she was finally charged with the murder of her two kids that nobody's ever been able to find and that she never helped find. There's a reason they aren't helping find Melody. The mother is not helping find Melody. All right, everybody, I'm going to look really quick. Oh, thank you so much, Lou. I really appreciate it. That's so sweet. See, I'm just going to look up. Let's see. What is this about mental instability? Mental is alleged by non-medical professionals. Lisa, I think that's a good point. The instability is being alleged by her own mother. That is the main point of the mental instability. But also we do know from authorities, because she had her child taken away from her in 2000. Melody was put in the care of an uncle. But that was long ago, 5 years ago. So we know that there is mental instability. I tell you, and for those of you who have been around somebody mentally unstable, it's unbelievable. Some people, their paranoia and their complete lack of sense of reality. By the way, somebody can be completely mentally unstable. And I think all murderers are, certainly people who kill kids are, but that doesn't mean that they don't know right from wrong. So I think that that is why most people who are quote unquote mentally stable, they're still legally responsible for their actions under the law. Yeah, sins and secrets, the reasons that the family was trying to get custody is because of this mental illness of hers. And I say mental illness, meaning paranoia, meaning treatment. We know that according to her own mother, Ashley's own mother, she was in the home about 2 years ago, and it was squalor. There was no edible food in the house. Rotten food was on the countertops. I can only imagine what those agents are encountering when they're going in there, because we all know with rotten, gross food, you're going to have varmints, you're going to have larvae, you're going to have fleas and maggots. It's disgusting. I've been in these homes. Roaches are going to abound. And so when you have somebody that can't mentally take care of themselves or take care of their child, and is, according to the mother of Ashley, she said she was so worried she was feeding her that rotten food because there was no other food in the house. And the issues that Ashley has with money and not being able to provide, these are huge issues. And when you have this paranoia and everything else, it's sometimes a state where a mother can rationalize in their own bizarre mind doing something terrible to their child. I want to just see if there's anything else. The car has been searched. We don't know what the outcome is, but they did obtain a search warrant to search that vehicle. Yeah, I agree, Sins and Secrets. They're listening. They're watching her. They're trying to develop. They're hoping she makes a mistake. Okay, a question from Faye. What is probable cause? So when you look at the standard of proof in any case, at the highest level is beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's what you need to find somebody criminally liable for an action. In a civil case and in cases where you're trying to show probable cause to a judge, it's just a preponderance. In other words, 51 versus 49%. If you 51% believe it shows that something is happening or that something could be in a particular place, you have passed the threshold of what you need to show to a judge that there is evidence in a place, or if you're in a civil case, that you've proven your case. It doesn't have to be beyond a reasonable doubt. It just has to be a preponderance. And that's sort of how I think judges look at probable cause. It's not the lowest standard, by the way. A lot of people say, oh, it's the lowest standard. No, that's reasonable suspicion. And as a police officer, I can have, based on my training and experience, reasonable position that say somebody is in possession of drugs by the way they're acting, by what they're doing, and I can detain that person based on my reasonableness of my suspicion. Above that is the standard of probable cause. And typically in a probable cause affidavit, you have to outline specific reasons why you believe not only that indicia of that crime is at a particular location, but you have to also show that it's there now, that it's not stale. So a lot of people think, oh, it's so easy to do these affidavits. It's not easy at all. And you have to swear before a judge that everything you said is true and correct to the best of your ability of understanding. So anyway, all that was done to be able to search the locker, to search her house, and to search the car. But believe me, it is going to come down on Melody sooner or later. I think they're really just trying to see if there's any chance Melody is alive, and if she's not alive, if there's they have any chance to find what happened to her. I mean, if she's not alive, what happened to her? Everyone, I can't thank you enough for being here and joining me on this beautiful morning. We'll have some more morning sessions. The chat has been terrific. It's wonderful to see hundreds and hundreds of you here in chat. I really appreciate it. I didn't know how a 9 o'clock show would go, but I think a lot of people want to get up, and maybe after watching Julie Grant, we can dial in on some of these cases a little bit closer. Again, thank you, Lou, for the kind super sticker. I really appreciate it. And for all of you, until next time, may justice be served.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.